Blog Talk Radio.
Now it's time for the Stepping Into My Power Blog Talk Radio Show with Dr. Imani Ma'at. This show is dedicated to bringing important health and wellness information, products, and services to communities in the U.S. and globally. Dr. Ma'at is a health educator, author, speaker, and health coach who is committed to helping others to step into their power and open doors to health, wellness, and prosperity. With her expert guests, this show is fun, informative, and serves as an awakening to those that are ready to wake up. So what are you waiting for? Enjoy this show and please invite others that you care about to listen in. There's no time like the right time, and the right time is now. Stepping Into My Power, Blog Talk Radio, starts right now.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Dr.
And now it's time for the Stepping.
It's so good, we wanted to hear it twice. Good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Imani. Welcome to another episode of Stepping Into My Power Blog Talk Radio Show. Today is June 17th, and we are very, very excited to, number one, be back on the air. This is our second show for this new season. And the other reason I'm very excited is because I have a phenomenal, phenomenal guest with us this evening, Mrs. Teresa R. Kemp. And I met Teresa in a restaurant, actually Queen Vida's International Restaurant here in Atlanta. And Teresa was helping, Queen Vida to write her book, which has now come out. It is Queen Vida's International Vegan Cuisine book. And I was so impressed with Teresa because we stopped and chatted. And once she told me she was writing Queen Vida's book, I told her that I'm also an author, and I've been sitting on my third book, and she just started sharing and sharing and sharing information to help me birth that book, and it is, like, really, really close. In fact, the next show is going to be dedicated to my book. So let me tell you a little bit more about Teresa Kemp, other than just being a very warm, genuine, sharing, giving, loving person. She is the fifth generation quilter and owner of the Plantation Quilts and UGRR Secret Quilt Code Museum here in Atlanta. She was born in West Germany to the late Dr. Howard and Serena Strother Wilson. She graduated from Berlin American High School and attended Ohio State University and West Virginia State University, where she graduated with a BA. She also went to DeVry here in Atlanta with a BS in Computer Information Systems. She, along with her parents, they opened the UGRR Secret Quilt Code Museum in 2005, which unfortunately had to close in 2007 because Mrs. Kemp realized she had colon cancer, and she is a colon cancer survivor. She also had congestive heart failure, and she's doing really, really well right now. She's a staunch advocate for conservation, healthier lifestyles for all, and she continues to return to be active in the YMCA's Live Strong program. As an abolitionist, she fights human trafficking while researching international slavery and preserving the world's cultural heritage. She wanted to document her Gullah Geechee culture for her grandchildren and their emphasis on faith, service, and conservation of the God-given land and resources of the earth. There's so much more that I can say about Mrs. Teresa Kemp, but she has her own book, The Keeper of the Fire, where she put 25 years of research and generations of travel, books, and resources into a 480-page document. Wow! That is an accomplishment in and of itself. She is the last thing I'm going to say because I'm real excited about this. She is on her way very soon to the motherland to go to Ghana, where she is going to be installed as a Nana Hema, and Hema, I just learned a few minutes ago, means born on Friday. So with that, and we're going to speak a little bit more about her background, I'd love to bring on Ms. Teresa Kemp. Ms. Teresa, are you there?
Absolutely, and thank you for that wonderful introduction.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm so excited about having you. I just get all tingly when I'm around in the presence of such intelligent people. When I see
oh, please do the one
page book. Mm-hmm.
It is amazing. I can't take credit for it. As you know, it is the work of five generations of my family, and each generation started with where they were and thought that it was important and that would be part of the healing process for them if they wrote down and documented their experiences. And so that's why I'm so excited to be on your show tonight. And it's all about that power and about that healing. And so now the bringing the book about has not just provided a healing for my family and documented my family, but for many other families and listeners on the radio.
That is amazing. That is truly, truly amazing. Five generations. That is awesome. And so talk with us a little bit about quilting and the healing that Well, I guess there's three parts: the quilting, the healing, the history, and all of that wrapped together in terms of, you know, telling us a little bit about yourself and your passion about this project.
Okay, okay. Well, the wonderful thing about quilting is that historically, times were hard, and no one family had everything, and community and extended family is how they survived the good times, the bad times, and everything in between. So when, particularly on cold days, when they weren't able to work or travel and things, the women would get together and quilt. And so you might have rice, I might have corn, somebody else has beef, but when seven or eight of us get together, we throw our little portion in the pot, and all of our kids would be fed. All of us would bring warm. I could bring one piece of wood, you bring a piece of wood, and we all stay warm, where independently that one piece of wood wouldn't have kept any of us or our families warm all day. So the families gathered together on a consistent basis, and they could quickly put together a quilt of scraps of old clothes, feed sack bags that had been bleached and redyed with like walnuts or berries, and or they would boil red and gold leaves with vinegar so that it would set in the fabric. But they would take whatever they had and make beautiful works of art, not just for themselves, mm-hmm. but for each family. And they were working with their own hands. And so that has a healing and a cleansing effect, and they talk and they eat. And then when you leave, you'd actually have what you need, whether it was curtains or tablecloths. It was those little extra things, and they'd all do something mm-hmm. special for one another. They would cry together. They would praise together. They would sit while someone's having a baby and one of them deliver it, and, you know, they'd mm-hmm. wrap it up and, you know, mm-hmm. and they'd keep going. So if somebody was sick or one of the men was sick, he'd be there, and then he had all the mothering and all the nursing that he needed. And so mm-hmm. I began to quilt. I was taught by my great-grandmothers, and they taught me to make the silk pillows that were really intricate, and they were fellow basket weavers and country doctors and midwives, and they grew everything mm-hmm. that they used to heal, and mm. they'd make tinctures, and that resulted in what we call remedies, treatments, and cures. And so we began to document those over the years. And while they were sitting around, they would always tell us about the quilt code, how prints and patterns and symbols were sewn into textiles that were used as maps and messages on the Underground Railroad. And my great aunt, Ozella, she copyrighted mm-hmm. the quilt code 4 years after her grandfather, Peter Farrow, died. Her mother is Nora Farrow. And Nora is my mother's mm-hmm. grandmother. And so Nora taught my mother to quilt and kept my mother when she was a little girl. My mother's father is born in 1851, and he died in 1943. So my mother mm-hmm. was young. So her mother mm-hmm. ended up with his 17 children. So she was very young, and some of his children were mm. older. So the older brothers and sisters and grandparents helped a young wife, new widow, mm-hmm. with her new mm-hmm. children. So my mm-hmm. mother was with her older brothers and sisters and with her great-grandparents and grandparents all the time. And he called mm-hmm. her, they told him they were the little Igbo gals. He'd make them count, memorize Bible verses, spell their names, and of course they had all the chores on the farm. They had passed mm-hmm. down 125 acres of land in McCormick, South Carolina. And that's also being out with nature, working with your own hands, the importance of community, their faith, family, and mm-hmm. community service. Those mm-hmm. things are paramount mm-hmm. in our family. And as we grew older, my mother knew she was an Igbo gal, but she didn't know what an Igbo gal was. So she began trying to find that out. And when she found out, we were together, and it was about 40 years ago, and we realized that the young lady from Nigeria was Igbo. Mm-hmm. And we mm-hmm. said, "What is Igbo?" And she kind of looked at us, and we go, "We're Igbo. We are Igbo." But that's mm-hmm. the first time we'd ever heard anybody outside our family say that. And she said, "Well, that's the place I live, and that's also what they call me. And that's like somebody when you're in college and the person is from Cincinnati and you can't remember his name, so you call him Cincinnati. Well, Cincinnati, Ohio is a city, but it's also where that young man who may be in at the University of Michigan is from. And so his friends call him Cincinnati. And that's the way people who were enslaved here, if they couldn't pronounce the name or it was difficult, sometimes they just called them where they were from. The way we do today.
I want to go back just a little bit. Because you said something that was so important in terms of history, and I know you document a lot of history in your book, the quilt codes. You mentioned that the quilt codes were quilt codes that were actually designed into the quilts and used. How did the quilt codes help in the Underground Railroad? Just so that we can connect the thought.
Sure. The book Hidden in Plain View was written by Dr. Jacqueline Tobin and Dr. Raymond DeBard he's from Howard University. She's a women's history professor at the University of Denver who met my great aunt Ozella, Nora's daughter, in Charleston quilt in the Charleston market as a quilter and Della basket weaver. And she told her about the codes. And that was the first time they had heard that as a use for quilts. Everybody knows they keep you warm. And that there were stories in the quilt, but they didn't know that they were used as a method of escape. And she gave her the story. The book Hidden in Plain View came out, but many people didn't believe it. Ozella had copyrighted the book the codes in the 1950s. And so what happens is they are some of the Adinkra symbols. They are some of the Nigerian symbols. But these symbols date back even into Egypt, and come all the way across Africa, because that was a question. People want to know who could read this code. How many people did this code help? And, you know, we were in the process of trying to figure those things out and document them, which is what led to a lot of the research in the book. How could the Nigerians understand what the people from Cameroon could understand, what the people from Ghana could understand? And the answer to that, as we found, they're the same people. Some stopped in Cameroon, some stopped in Nigeria, some stopped in Dahomey, which is now the Republic of Benin, some stopped in what is now Togo, some continued on to Ghana. And they celebrate the same festival. They use colors as identifying for certain traditions. Such as the funeral. In Ghana, they wear red, and black is a young person. They wear white. The Adinkra symbols have a meaning and used to be stamped into cloth and sent as a form of a message from village to village, from family group to inform people of what was happening. They used the music and drumming. They used the colors and signs and symbols.
Yeah, do me a favor, because I am well familiar with the Adinkra symbols, well, sort of. I mean, I actually have a poster in my house of the Adinkra symbol, so I, you know, kind of keep it present in my mind. But I bet a lot of people, many of our listeners might not be familiar, so why don't you spell that? Because I always encourage people to Google while we're speaking, just so that they know exactly what we're speaking about. The Adinkra, spell Adinkra.
Okay, and I'm a little bit hoarse, so I apologize, but it's
A-D. I know you're out at that festival this weekend, Juneteenth Festival. Good for you. Good for you.
Yes, yes. But A-D-I-N-K-R-A, Adinkra.
The Adinkra symbols. And it's interesting you mentioned
those are in Ghana.
Yes. And it's interesting you mentioned the Igbo woman. She was from Nigeria, because I've been to Nigeria, and I know that's where I first met Igbo. But you mentioned that there were people around the West Coast of Africa who were also familiar with the different codes, regardless of which quote-unquote tribe they were with.
Correct.
You know, so, yeah, that's very interesting.
Now, for your listeners, I have had some people come up to me and say they find the word tribe derogatory, and they want me to say their group. But I'm saying the tribes because, as you know, my mother's Igbo group or tribe or clan were declared Jews. So we consider them the tribes, or they're being called the tribes of Israel based on many things, on DNA, the customs, but the use of these codes, the use of the colors, their skills of being metalsmiths, weavers of fine fabric, being able to do indigo, circumcision, customs of marriage, having traditional religious rulers who govern the people without an army, or makers of kings by the hunting skills and techniques that were done in East Africa, and by owning and possessing artifacts in West Africa that came out of East Africa, or embalming techniques which are traditionally thought of as being Egyptian, or as building pyramids in Nigeria, or as having Hebrew in the floor of their homes in Nigeria, or the Star of David in Ave fabric in the Volta region of Ghana, or putting Hebrew symbols in West, in palm, raffia for palm mats in their homes. They have forgotten what the language is, but they know their great-grandparents spoke it. They know they embalmed people in Ghana on the way down to Mankasim. So my current research, I'm really excited. I'll give you all a sneak peek of what's coming. Osun was, there's the Osun Sacred Grove in Nigeria. And I'm going to actually put some pictures out there for your listeners today on my blog site, ugrrcode.blogspot.com. And what happened,
let me repeat that just for everyone, just to make sure they heard it. Her blog spot is ugrquiltcode.blogspot.com. Blogspot is one word, blogspot.com. And so you're going to put some pictures on the blogspot while we're speaking.
Because your listeners, they may know the answers and help us fill in some of the blanks. So I depend on interaction with people worldwide to help us solve some of these mysteries, because they know things that we don't know. So the Osun also was one of the three warriors that arrived with a group of people migrating on into Ghana. And two of the warriors died, and Osun took the people on down from central Ghana to the coast of Mankasim. And so the two that died, they embalmed on the way, and they are buried, or entombed, as they said, in Mankasim. So I'm now curious if the same Osun that's in Nigeria is this warrior Osun who was in Ghana. Mm. And when they arrived, he threw a spear in the ground like the sword in the stone that can be removed of natural means, and called that in front of God. And the elders gathered there to settle disputes and arbitrate between the people, and the kingmakers meet there to make the kings. And, of course, they remove their shoes when they get there. So it's really exciting to see the similarities. So in Ghana, they have market days. In Nigeria, they have market days. And here in America, I collect the stories of people I meet at book signings or exhibits. And this past Monday, a man was telling me his grandmother was born into slavery, and her horses and mules were named after the day they were born. And he turned to me and said, "You know, that's an African custom. They're named after market days," which means the day they were born. And I thought, now, here's another family who's continued the African custom of using the names of market days.
Isn't that amazing?
Like sweeping the yard. His grandmother made brooms, but not realizing she made brooms with an African technique, or we weave or sew. And when people see our baskets or quilts, they're saying, "This is African." And I'm like, "No, I was born in Germany, and, you know, I live in America. It's not African." And they go, "No, that's African. I'm from Africa. I know African baskets."
They know African.
And I was like, that's an American.
I want to just bring our listeners up to date. I mentioned in the beginning of the show that I met you at Queen Vida's restaurant here in Atlanta. And was it through working with her? Because she's Ghanaian, right?
Yes.
Queen Vida's.
Yes.
Yeah, and so tell us a little bit about how through working with her on her book, you know, concerning the vegetarian cuisine, international vegetarian cuisine, working with her led you to connect with relatives of hers in Ghana, and just tell us what transpired, because that's a beautiful story in and of itself. Because I know you were, the way you shared your information with me, I know that you were very, very helpful and giving to her in that process of helping her with her book. And sometimes we do things just out of the goodness of our heart. We just give, and then amazing things happen in terms of what we get back. So tell our listeners, because that's an important part of the story and something that we try to encourage young people to volunteer, to give, to share. So I'll be quiet and let you tell your story.
Well, you know, just like this show says, when we step into our power, each of us have strengths and gifts.
Mm-hmm.
Vida is an amazing cook, and I kept telling her, you got to write a book. We need a cookbook. And I have daughters and daughters-in-law who cannot cook at all. And they're not eating healthy. And now in America, more than ever before, we're seeing more young women have to use in vitro fertilization and having trouble having babies and stressing enough about being 30 and haven't had a baby. And we've never had that in the history of America. The problem used to be just the opposite. And so it's what we eat. It's the chemicals in our food. And Vida, being a friend of mine, Queen Vida has such a powerful message on health and discipline and reading the ingredients and young women cooking for their husbands and their families so that they're healthy both spiritually and physically and mentally. Because it's good for the wives. The children can study and focus. We don't have the sugars. We don't have the illnesses. And traditionally, when you have all fresh, chopped up, cooked food, then you're healthier. And that's how I got over cancer. Not particularly with Queen Vita's food, by eating fresh, chopped up African food with no preservatives, no chemicals, no MSG, and no steroids. One of my friends brought me here to Vita's to get the kale greens. So if young people are looking for fast food, there's nothing faster than cooking kale greens or foods that we don't have to cook, and hers tastes so delicious. So what happened in blessing her, the Word of God says He blesses those that bless us. She had blessed me, and Vida gave me a book, and she still doesn't realize how powerful the book is. It ought to be encased, air vacuumed and everything. But Haile Selassie gave the Ashanti Hini of Ghana the Lion of Judah from Israel. That is amazing. And she's got photos of the gift that he gave before he died, and it's in Kumasi. So then she was talking to her Uncle Paul, who lives in Kumasi. Well, my mother had made quite a few research trips and to Ghana with her friend Queen Ann Walker, and had met Vida in Ghana many, many years ago in the 90s. And Vida didn't even know. But Queen Mother Ann Walker is the one that told us the two had met. And I was here at Vida's. And then when I talked to Vida's uncle, my mother had actually been in the courts of the Ashanti Hini and gotten the Adinkra stamps to learn more about their meanings and how the fabric was done in textiles. So Queen Vida's uncle, Paul, is a historian. So we have been spending weeks and days and months talking about the history of Ghana and the evolution of the people. And when I told my Nigerian mentors about Osun and the word Ashanti meaning those who would not listen, that's the name of Dr. Njoku's Nigerian town. And they called the people those who would not listen. And they stayed there in Nigeria. And the group continued on into Ghana. And the Ashanti, they stayed in the larger central region. And the Fanti continued on. And the meaning of the word Fanti is half have left. So half have left, half had left, or half have gone on.
Okay. Half.
And so what happened is the words have a meaning that are still in Nigeria and still in Ghana today. And so it's now looking like they're the same group. And several clans or tribes I found in Ghana, they celebrate the Yam Festival. They use the lunar calendar. They do libation. They sing. They drum. They have the sacred groves. They have the atonement of sin with blood sacrifice out of the book of Leviticus. But they're calling when they pray and hear from God to discern an illness and heal it. They've been told it's voodoo, fetish, or witch doctors. So I've been exploring since my family were healers in Nigeria, healers here, using herbs and prayer and fasting and prayer. These are the same thing that the witch doctors, or what they're calling witch doctors in Nigeria, do, and the same thing that they're saying the witch doctors in Ghana do. And Queen Vida's family are familiar with these, and so he gives me the Ghanaian names, and Queen Vida is assisting me in learning the language and some of the customs, like not using my left hand, always greeting people. And they in Nigeria, they have chi, which is like the breath of life or the spirit of God that's in us. So much so that when you sneeze, they pray the breath of life back in you. In America, in the African and African-American community, when you sneeze, we say God bless you, because it's as if your heart is skipping a beat or your breath has left your body, and we're praying for your return to health.
Wow.
So we have questions that we don't even think about in terms of our health and healing. And you being someone who's so health conscious inspired me to continue on and to study. And as you know, the conversation we were having was about the use of natural herbs and things that are here to help heal our body. And as you know, I am a little stubborn in some areas because that seems like it's going to be excessive for me to take the hemp oil twice in the morning and twice at night because I want to run around and I want to do stuff. But sometimes we have to be still and we have to take care of our bodies and we have to study the herbs and we have to do what's natural. And we have to change our mind. And that's what we have to do in terms of healing ourselves about the conditions of slavery and who we are. That we came as the elite, as the skilled, as the knowledgeable, and they had cotton and indigo and sugarcane and tobacco and could take nuts and press oil, and they could take a piece of wood and make something fabulous, and they could find minerals in the ground and make beautiful jewelry and artifacts and fish hooks, and they could just dance and weave mats and clothes and nets to catch fish, take a tree trunk and carve a canoe and cross the waters. It's amazing what we can do.
In saying that, it's so interesting because a lot of my listeners know that I'm very much an entrepreneur and encourage people to be entrepreneurs. And when you're in Africa, everyone has a skill or a trade. And so when they meet you, they ask, what do you sell? what is your product? And it's so interesting how, you know, we've lost that. And, you know, slowly but surely people are coming back to the fact of developing their craft, developing their trade. And it's unfortunate because it's kind of like going against the grain in this country to do that. You know, everybody's kind of going along and, you know, going to school, getting a good job and kind of just following a pattern, you know, that's been placed there for us, but in terms of stepping out and really developing a craft or a skill or a gift, you know, I believe that we all have natural gifts and so many of those are suppressed within, you know, within people here in this country. So it's just amazing. Like you said, everyone's doing something, you know, when you're there. Everyone has some craft.
We all have a gift. That's right. We all have gifts. And we must encourage and edify each other to maximize those gifts and support one another. One of the things I see people do is they tell young men, sit down and shut up. And then somehow we want them to stand up and show up and speak up when they become adults, but they haven't been trained.
Right.
And when I came to America, I knew that slavery had nothing to do with color, but everything to do with economics and greed. Because on the block site, they're going to see that Poland had slavery 1,300 years below ground in salt mines, and every group except for Ethiopia has been enslaved. Oh, and Switzerland. has never been colonized and have never been enslaved, and it all had to do with greed and money. So what happens is in America, when I came, I was in college, I was 15 years old, and they were telling me about the wealth and the glory and the knowledge and wisdom of Egypt, but they were telling me Egypt was not Africa, and they were separating the deep, dark Congo or West Africa as being illiterate, unskilled, pagan, and poor, and that my son, because he's a descendant of African slaves, should expect nothing more. So it was important to me in the book, Keeper of the Fire, to also document the resistance to that the people did, whether it was a sacrifice of life or slowing down of the work or disabling tools or poisons or running off the farm animals and, you know, different things, but of just downright uprisings and, you know, overtaking a town. There's so many of them, but we don't hear or see those. So we must do our own research and find out what did our family do, document our town. Otherwise, just like my family story, millions, the number has been, I've heard 20,000, I've heard 60,000 to 80,000 books of our family's story were sold worldwide by Random House and Doubleday and Hidden in Plain View. So we went to court because it had been copyrighted by my great aunt Ozella, then by my mother and I, and we won in the courts of California. So if somebody's telling your listeners family story, whether it is sharecropping or the coal mines or being on the train or making shoes or being a shoeshine person, they need to write their story. When your children tell us stories, we need to write them down and publish them. We have to not be afraid of writing. Go ahead.
And you know what? I'm going to make not a shameless plug, but a plug, because one of the things that I'm doing in addition to finishing my book is it's pretty much finished. We're just going through the production stage. But thank you. So the other thing is that so many people have come to me over the past few years and asked about writing their story, writing their book. And I'm actually starting a service to help people to tell their stories in a book. And I have a system laid out. So, you know, I'll give you more of the details after the call. But if people are interested in having us help them with their book, and you may want to get involved too, it's you can contact me at 404-702-4382. And also, this is a good time just to announce the station. You're listening to the Stepping Into My Power Blog Talk Radio Show. This is Dr. Imani, and I am interviewing Mrs. Teresa R. Kemp, the author of Keepers of the Fire. And since I'm doing that, Teresa, let's give your contact information, your phone, your website for people to follow up with you. And, you know, we can do it again at the end of the show. Also, before you do that, Teresa, for our listeners who are listening online, if you'd like to, I'm going to open up the lines in a minute for questions and answers with our guest. So if you'd like to call in, the number is 646-915-9853. And you press 1 to be in the host queue. And we actually do have a couple people holding on that might want to speak with you, Teresa. So let's give your contact information. This is great. You're just a wealth of information. And for you, we really needed to have a two-hour show. We may actually go a little bit beyond the hour. But tell us your phone number, your Facebook, your blog, your website, and go slowly so that they can write this down.
I will. We do want you to give your phone number again because you only gave it to us one time. But this is Teresa.
I'll do that again.
On Facebook, it's Teresa R. Kemp, and the UGRR Secret Quilt Code Museum. So go like me on Facebook at Teresa R. Kemp, and that's the author's page. And I just put pictures out there that people had requested from the festival. Anything that you request tonight, I will update the Facebook pages because I know some people are really into Facebook. And the UGRR Secret Quilt Code Museum. So that's Facebook. On LinkedIn,
Teresa, I'm sorry. Let me just say that it's Teresa without an H. because people may be trying to write T-H-E. So it's T-E-R-E-S-A.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And I had to put the R in there because when I Googled Teresa Kemp, I found out that I had died several times. I had been in my obituaries and not a single picture of me. So also people check your name with social media and find a unique way to put it in there where it comes up to you and your things you're doing. So then plantationquilts.com, PlantationQuilts, all one word, plantationquilts.com is my website and the official homepage of the Underground Railroad Secret Quilt Code. So that's of the McDaniel and Farrell family. If you put in Underground Railroad Quilt Code, UGRR is Underground Railroad, abbreviated, Quilt Code, Teresa Kemp or Atlantis Quilt Lady. Mm-hmm. If you Google it, you'll come up to many things with us, some interviews from the Civil War and just a freedom interview. And we have a children's book, Jamel's Deep Sea Adventure. It talks about our family coming from Africa, being Gullah, how we used to go crabbing and fishing and getting oysters and clams and come back and cook. And you could smell my grandmother and great-grandmother's pies out the window. And my grandfather and uncles had made the wooden tables. And we were doing lemonade with either mango or some type of twist of peaches or fruits in them. And our neighbors could smell everything. And they knew, they could hear everything getting cracked and ready to eat. And by now our mouths are watering. But my grandson doesn't have that, where everybody gathers in the evening from the community. The music is playing. The people are singing and dancing. Some are quilting, repairing the nets for the next day, cleaning the shrimp boxes and eating pies. And everybody from the neighborhood getting together and bringing something. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to tell the children about that and the scientific language for the or names of the animals and contractions and conversational punctuation for our children 5 to 10 years old. They shouldn't be in high school, junior high or middle school trying to figure out how to put in punctuation in conversation. So the younger we're introducing these concepts, the better they're going to do on their standardized test. And then knowing marine mammals and how many seas there are, there's 313 seas, and the ocean's names, one of the ocean's names changed in 2000. So many of our children are failing or missing those questions on standardized tests because we have to keep studying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's so, so very important. And I, you know, I've continued to work with young people and mentors and teachers of young people. So I will definitely plug your book whenever we've talked about that, just plugging each other's books and making sure that, that our audiences get to know about each other our work. And so, yeah, so that's important. And it's so great that your grandson has a publication. He's got a book in his name. What a powerful thing for him. How old was he when you all finished that book, when he finished it?
He was 9 years old to be the illustrator of the book, Keeper of the Fire. He is the illustrator of the book. He did the drawings of the Sankofa bird. Yes, he's the illustrator. He did the drawings of the Sankofa bird, the fish. So when we talk about the fishing culture, I wanted him to show me some African fish. And then he did we were talking about the animals. And then when we got to America, I was telling him about how hard it was. You know, the people didn't get to have allergies working in the fields. There were no bathrooms. They worked sun up to sundown. And there were no Band-Aids, and there was no Neosporin, and there were no brakes, and there were no all of the things that we have now. And I said it was almost a different breed of person. And so I was telling him about the mosquitoes here in the South. There was no protection from West Nile virus. You know, they didn't really even heard of these things. And I told him there were no bottled waters, and there were no disposable cups, and everybody drank out of the litter and bucket and survive somehow. And so he drew me some really pretty mosquitoes, and I was telling him about the animals and the relationship of the African people to animals. And he has developed relationships, and I want him to, with the birds, feeding the birds, watching how nature changes things, grow the squirrels and squirrel babies come through the neighborhood and things. And they were very in tune, as our families were, with animals and natural things. So now we need to get to these listeners in the queue. I can't wait for these questions. I want to hear what this.
Yeah, okay. Well, hold on. We've got somebody. Okay. And I'm going to open the line. The last four numbers are 1932, area code 919. Good evening. Would you like to say hello? And if you have any questions for Teresa, for our guest. Hello, hello.
They may have their phone on mute.
I know. I was thinking that looks like my good buddy in North Carolina who may have his phone muted, and that's okay. That's okay. Well, again, I encourage people who are listening on computer to call in 646-915-9853. When are you going to have an opportunity to have someone like Teresa Kemp to ask her question? She is a walking dictionary, anthology. Just, she's got so much information. And while we are waiting for people to call in, if they call in, if they don't, it's okay. We've got lots to talk about. I want you to share with our guests about your upcoming trip and the symbolism of that.
Okay.
Is that okay? Do you want to talk about that?
Certainly. That's fine. What I wanted to talk to address as a griot, our family, the eldest in the family, has rehearsed events, the births, significant, or basically lived through all of those things. And so they have memorized by telling people the story and our children the story and the grandchildren the stories. And by memorizing the history of your community or the people, you become what's called a griot. And the griot memorizes all these things and passes it on. So I've memorized our family's history over 40-some years under my mother, and my mother formerly was the griot. And so there are griots in Africa and different cultures, and we memorize the stories verbatim, the dates, the intricacies of those things, and pass it from generation to generation. So I'm going to go on a medical mission trip with ASA World to Anambra State, Nigeria. And the medical mission trip actually starts on the 3rd of July, but I'm leaving June 30th. And I'll fly to Paris. And in Paris, I will then meet the other group of international surgeons, nurses, registered nurses, public health officials, pharmacists, tech, volunteers, researchers. We have all different disciplines of doctors coming from Spain, Ireland, Greenland, the UK, from Africa, Dubai, Australia, China, and the United States. And they are going to go to 5 towns and do surgeries for free for 2 weeks. And I've been given 150 books by a group called Dawn Development Association, but basically they try for the improvement of lives with resources in the Bexley, Ohio community to take. And I will be doing a lending library for children while they're waiting for surgeries or waiting for their parents to come out of surgery. And it introduces the concept that your baby can read. My daughter and children donated those, where my grandsons and my great-grandchildren began to read in infancy by you showing them the pictures and flashcards, ABCs, numbers, colors, music, and they sing it and play it and point to their nose, eyes, ears, and mouth. And your babies can too, but if you don't interact with them in a conscious and very consistent manner and with positive things, then they can be 2 or 3 years old and not pronouncing words or sentences. But they can swim and do all those things. Whatever you introduce them to, that is what they're going to give you back. So on this trip, I'm going to be working with young mothers or young parents. Let me say parents. And with young people on birth control, with the focus on continuing education. I'll be working with elders who maybe didn't have the chance to read. And I'll be talking with them about sanitation. And the men on the trip, because they're surgeons on our conference calls, They gave me this whole host of things, diabetes, sexually transmitted diseases. I just get the gamut of things that we need to have a discussion about. But because I'm a mother and a grandmother and great-grandmother, I've had these discussions many times. Promiscuity and all of these things in our health and things that we take for granted. So many of our young people, even in America or what we're calling in major cities, they have not been taught these things, and we're finding that it affects it. We're with the extended family, we have that. So when I go to Africa, I will be working on development of business with international marketing in mind. And in Ghana, when I'm in Thug, I'll be over women's development for the central region of Ghana. And I will be finding business opportunities, but I said you cannot develop women without first developing men and first developing children, because we are all of these things and we're all interconnected. So, you know, we're, as women, we're not in a vacuum. We can't be whole if we don't love and first take care of ourselves. If we're not whole and healthy. And we're only whole and healthy when our significant others, our love, whatever it is not whole and healthy. So we're going to be addressing health. We're going to be addressing living conditions, sanitation, sewage. And I've tried to pre-document existing conditions, like they don't have drainage or they don't have clean water. And, you know, one of the misconceptions I do want to address before we go much further is to say, I went and got a book called The Other Side of Africa, because on TV, many of us still have that Tarzan perception. We don't see cities that are sprawling like Atlanta and like a New York, and we don't know that in every country there are major cities and paved streets and telephone and internet and
all the latest technology.
Absolutely. And so my friends and family have been saying, well, are you going to be safe out there in the jungle? Many of the African people I spoke with never saw elephants, gorillas, or anything, monkeys even, until they came to American zoos.
Went to
or
a zoo,
to a zoo
right.
in Africa.
Exactly. I know, I remember being in, well, South Africa is a unique case, but I remember being there, and I had gotten a new cell phone, or was it a camera? I think it was gotten a new camera. Before I went there, it was like, you know, latest technology and so forth. And there was a young lady who was working with our group, and she had the same camera. And I'm like, wow. You know, it was like it was no big deal. I mean, she, in fact, I think she had hers before I had mine. So, you know, and that's true for throughout Africa. You find people with lots of hold on 1 second. With all the latest technology. So it really takes away. You know, it gets rid of all the myths and stereotypes that people hold about Africa. So, you know, and I find that when I'm there, I learn so much. You know, just about life and about nature and about culture and all of that. So I can just imagine how that trip is going to be for you and the others that are part of the medical mission. It's going to be life-changing for you and for the people who get to benefit from your group being there. So,
and they do it each year, so they're doing follow-up studies. But, you know, the biggest thing when we're talking about stepping into your power, my mom, when she got there, she was riding in a bus, crowded and everything, and she called me up. And she said, you're not going to believe this. She said, the billboards all have black people. The commercial all have black people. And she grew up in a time when we weren't represented on television. And my first cousin, Ophelia DeVore, she had the modeling agency where many of the first black, Lieutenant Uhura, Diana Carroll, Eartha Kitt, Leslie Uggams, Richard Roundtree, all came through her modeling agency. And we began to see people of color, and let me say this, I hate to say people of color, everybody has color, but we began to see people of African descent on television on a consistent basis in roles, not just a cartoon type role and not just being stereotyped. But my mother was very empowered by that. And then she, we banked white potatoes and sweet potatoes, and she found they banked white potatoes and sweet potatoes. They used dried or smoked fish, and she had used that as a child. And that's where in the book, Keeper of the Fire, we began to document Oka-isms or Igbo-isms, because their craft guilds here in America or organizations like a fraternity or a sorority or the Masons or Eastern Stars that have their own language. And the metalsmiths, like my ancestor Peter Farrell, who came as an enslaved metalsmith, they had their own language in their craft guild in the town of Oka that other residents couldn't speak. So I will actually get to go to Oka and talk with some of the metalsmiths, see where he worked. And I had taken my DNA in 2012, which showed me that we came from East Africa, across Central Africa, down into South Africa even, and into Nigeria and Ghana, then being enslaved, coming through Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, which was called Valongo, a slaving wharf port. And then they were quarantined off the coast of Sullivan Island, outside of Charleston, South Carolina, then brought, fattened, and fed for market, oiled, and sold in the Charleston slave markets. And from there, they went to the Glen Dover Hall Plantation in Glen County, Georgia. So when people ask me, well, how do you know where your family came from? How do you have so much information? At the time, you know, we were doing research the old-fashioned way in archives. But when my parents and I spoke, my mother went to Salt Lake City, Utah, and spoke at the United Nations Conference on Women and Families. And there the Mormon church did her family genealogy as a gift, sending us to the plantation. And we found over 1,000 plantation documents. And in the documents are Peter Farrell and his wife Eliza were valued 4 times. And we have copies of the wills, even in the book, I put those there, that show 1844, 1858, Africans on this plantation had been former slaves, now living free in Freetown, Massachusetts, and they even would sell one group of slaves, and the money or proceeds from the sale were given to the formerly enslaved ones who were free. And then in the wills, it also states in documents that they could work and keep the proceeds of their labor for their own benefits all the days of their lives. So my family didn't believe after the owner died, the first owner, the second owner, William Dover Jenkins, or not owner, but holder of them, would be the same, where they could go from plantation to plantation freely. They were absentee owners 6 months of the year. They would work and keep the money and then give a percentage to the holder when he returned, because they had yellow fever and malaria, and they were of European descent, and the Native Americans and many Europeans died from those diseases. So during the summertime and when the mosquitoes and things were worse, they would travel north or go to Europe or just travel throughout so as not to die. And so these group here, they govern themselves. And that's very unusual. So they had their own homes, and it's documented a gentleman came from England, and he called them cottages. And he said, make his home in England look like a hovel. And he said that they had flowers in front, their gardens on the side, and their livestock in the back, and that they could cook and sing and dance. He said at one point he was worried for their souls. They had always been heard that they were pagan. He said, but when he heard them sing, he thought they were angels. He thought the angels had come down. He said, when he heard them preach, he said he was inspired, and he then began to doubt his belief, and was he in right standing after he saw the rousing and the spirit in these people. And so I enjoy reading about them in canoes singing as they go through, you know, the Gullah and swampy areas of, you know, Sapelo and Beaufort, South Carolina and the Susquehanna.
So let me ask you, Teresa, a lot of this, the story that you're sharing is included in your book, The Keepers of the Fire, right?
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am.
So, what an inspiration, because so many people, you know, our sense of who we are is connected to our sense of history or sense of lack of history. So, you know, I'm sure that people will be encouraged. Where can they find your book? Where can they get a copy? We are actually at the top of the hour. And okay. we're going to keep on for just a few minutes, but tell our listeners where they can get your book, Keepers of the Fire.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, on my website, plantationquilts.com, there is a coupon for a 30% discount with the publishers createbase.com. It's available on amazon.com. It's on Barnes and Noble's borders.com. It's available mm-hmm. on many, many websites, and there were even giveaways on Goodreads .com. And
Ooh.
The most exciting thing for your listeners, Dr. Imani, is that
okay.
it has 33 countries of libraries, museums, and archives. It has a 550-book bibliography. It has a slave name database so that you can find the names of 56,000 people who did not lose those African names. It has the California Insurance Database, where people who were enslaved were insured for loss or death.
Mm-hmm.
So, plantationquilts.com
is
where they can find the book.
Beautiful hardcover book that I think you have it in both black and white and color. And this is Keepers of the Fire is a must-have. You need to have it on your living room table or dining room table so people can go through it when they come and visit your home. It is absolutely a treasure, and you are a treasure, Teresa. And it's just such a pleasure knowing you and connecting with you and just learning your heart and your spirit has been a real, real pleasure. And we wish you all the best on your trip to Africa. You know you have to come back on the show to tell our listeners
Absolutely.
About your trip, about the highlights, about the people you meet, about what it's like to be installed and all that means, all of the high honor that comes with that title. So we are, if you have some more any parting words for our guests? Again, we're just so thrilled that you made the time to come on the show. I know that you are busy preparing for your trip and selling your books and getting your information out there. So give us some words of encouragement before we sign off for the evening.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. Thank you for being a person of health who is empowering people like myself and your listeners. I want to leave with the fact that as we step into our power and authority, we should reach out and pull others in. We should use our gifts and talents to bring other people up. And what you'll find is when we forget about our situation and our ills or our diseases and then focus on those around us and edify those around us, it makes our cares seem so small as we make those around us so large. But focus on saying good things about ourselves and good things about the people around us. Think positive thoughts, and you have whatsoever you say.
All right. Thank you so much. And with those words, we are going to close out this segment of Stepping Into My Power, Blog Talk Radio Show. This and every show is recorded and archived, so please encourage people if they missed the show to go on the site and listen at their leisure, because you dropped some serious pearls this evening and we are so grateful. So we look forward to speaking with you again when you come back from your trip to the motherland.
Thank you and good night, listeners.
All right. Thank you so much. I'll play a little bit more of Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes to take us out, because our theme is waking everyone up and having them step into their power. Have a good evening, and we will be back next Wednesday. I'll be talking about my book, my new book, How to Fight Childhood Obesity, One Poem at a Time. And with that, we'll see you next Wednesday. Have a good evening. Thanks again, Teresa. Take care. Bye-bye.
wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking. Time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hell.